This is Lawrence Spivak inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the Republican senator from New York, Jacob K. Javits. Senator Javits has been mentioned as a possible vice presidential candidate in 1968. He is now serving as campaign chairman for Governor Nelson Rockefeller in his bid for re-election in New York. We'll have the first questions now from Merrill Muller of NBC News.
Senator Javits, a New York Times poll published today shows that the Republicans are likely to make sweeping gains in the governorships in this election and only nominal gains in Congress. Isn't the party likely to throw up its 1968 leaders from the gubernatorial winners?
Not necessarily. We may get some out of those who are running in the Senate races, too. For example, a lot of attention has been concentrated on Ed Brooke in Massachusetts and on Hatfield in Oregon, on Percy in Illinois, or even a congressman like Bob Taft Jr. in Ohio. But probably the leading contender will be a governor, and it'll probably be Governor Romney of Michigan. And I would say that what you've just put gives the dilemma of my party. Nationally, we're not offering the people alternatives and answers. In states, we are, with progressive governors like Nelson Rockefeller and Romney and Scranton and others, and I think it's showing up in the poll.
I was in Michigan the other night, and I heard talk among Republicans of a Romney-Javits ticket. Have you been approached formally on this?
No, I have not, and there'd be no occasion for it. I think our job is to show in 1966 election that the progressive forces in the Republican Party can make it in elections. And then we must coalesce behind the candidate and the policy which will enable us to challenge in 68 and separate us from the disaster of 64.
How do you feel you're going to defeat the Goldwater hold on the party machinery as of now, between now and 68?
There's nothing to defeat a hold like that. They're better than victories. And if we show that our brand of Republicanism can win, and if this survey is right, it will confirm that very definitely. Then I think we will have come half the way. The other way is by precincts and states in terms of organizing those forces who feel as we do. And the last way, and critically important, is to coalesce as promptly as possible, and I think it can be done in 67, behind a standard bearer, and not have the problems we had in 64 when we were divided until it was too late to coalesce. We coalesced behind Scranton at the very last minute, and it just wouldn't go.
Suppose Governor Rockefeller wins big again here in his third term bid. What's to prevent the bug from biting him again? Do you have any commitments against this?
Well, the governor has made a very important public commitment. Indeed, he's asked the people of New York to support him on the basis that he will dedicate the next 4 years to their service. There's nothing in the world that prevents the bug from biting anybody, including my own friend and the man I'm campaign chairman for, Governor Rockefeller. But this is a pretty impressive public commitment. He's a man of very high character, and I would doubt very much that that's likely to happen.
Is he committed to support you if you try for the vice presidency on the ticket in 68?
No, he has said that if he is governor and he does have any influence with the state delegation, I'll be their favorite son. And that, in a sense, is somewhat logical. I'm the senior person around here, and I've served for, I think, effectively for a considerable time. And the governor having taken himself out of it, that seems like a rather logical conclusion, though no one can deliver any delegation, certainly not the New York delegation, neither the governor nor I nor anyone else, and time will have to tell. But I hope to earn that kind of distinction on merit.
Thank you, Senator Javits. We'll be back with Meet the Press and more questions for our guest, but first,
please remember questions of the panel members do not necessarily reflect their own point of view. Here is our moderator, Lawrence Spivak.
Resuming our interview, our guest today on Meet the Press is Senator Jacob K. Javits, Republican of New York. You've just met Merrill Muller of NBC News. The other reporters on our panel are Vermont Royster of the Wall Street Journal, Nick Timmish of Time Magazine, and David Broder of the Washington Post. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Royster.
Senator, in talking with Merrill Muller a few moments ago, you said that one of the problems was that Republicans were offering alternatives in many of the state and local elections, but weren't offering any alternatives on a national level. Now, how can the Republicans offer voters a viable alternative to the Democrats on the national level if they don't offer something different from the policies and programs of the Democrats. And what would those alternatives be?
Well, let me give you a few examples, because this is kind of the business I'm in the Congress. You take in the poverty program, there's an enormous effort to use the private enterprise system, that is to use our business concerns. A good many business concerns run Job Corps camps. There's been a proposal, which I've made, it's only one man's proposal, there are others, to organize a large corporation, something like the Communication Satellite Corporation, financed by private investors in respect of the poverty program, many aspects of which are business things, like manpower training and helping small business. Now, there's an alternative. In the housing field, in the state of New York, for example, the state of New York's been very successful in financing middle-income housing through bond issues, which represent a conglomerate mortgage upon all the housing that's financed at lower interest rates than are otherwise possible without even a state guarantee. That's never gotten anywhere in the federal establishment.
Are you trying to say then, Senator, that one alternative on such things as a poverty program would be to get diminish the role of the federal government and enlarge the role of either private operations or state governments?
Exactly right, and that's what Republicans ought to be for. We ought to use all the things we've got. Let me give you just one other example. We have a lot of problem with the international imbalance in payments, and it's one of the things that's causing higher interest rates, tight money, and our financial difficulties with respect to inflation. My party ought to get aboard the proposition that we ought to have an international monetary conference to have a new kind of reserve currency in the world, instead of being, as we are, tied solely to the dollar and the pound, especially in view of the weakness of the pound. Now, that sounds very abstruse, but it's very important that my party could render an enormous service if it espoused some such role.
Well, one of the problems in the balance of payments and these other things, even agreed to by economists in Washington, is the government spending, particularly government spending overseas. Now, as a Republican, do you disagree with the Democratic habit of running continuing deficits in the governments?
Sorry, to run continuous deficits in times of high income, if you're willing to face the music. That's why I was for a tax increase instead of this politically more palatable alternative of a suspension of the investment tax credit, which we just put through the Senate the other day.
You think the government should balance the budget at this time?
I think it should in times of prosperity. Now, you may be verging on a time, you may have missed the boat on that, which is the reason that people like myself advocated a special tax increase for Vietnam early this year. I believe in times when the public has high income, we should do our utmost to balance the budget and pay something on the national debt.
You think raising people's taxes will help them meet this high cost of living? If you raise my taxes, I'm then better able to afford the high cost of living?
Mr. Royster, that's a very proper question. And, of course, you can't, but what it does is to take down some of the pressure upon goods, which are being chased by money in all directions of the economy. You might be able to use your car a year longer than you do now. And secondly, it will have a restraining...
The biggest spender chasing goods is not me, Senator. It's the federal government.
Well, I wouldn't say that. The federal government spends about the 20% of what there is in the economy. That still leaves 80% that consumers spend. I couldn't agree that it's only the federal government. But I do think that in a war situation, you have to take the top off inflation by some increase in taxes and calling for some sacrifice.
Would you match this with taking some of the spending out of the federal? Would you reduce the federal government spending as well as mine?
In those things that could be deferred, as for example in construction, I would, and I voted that way. In those things that represent, in a rich nation like our own, the poverty, the health, or the education of the people, I would not try to retrench in those, because that's self-defeating.
Mr. Timmish.
Senator, I'd like to ask you about some Republican names, new and old. If Percy wins in Illinois, do you think he'll be a presidential possibility in 1968?
I do not, and I'll tell you why. I don't think we ought to jump at presidential possibilities of men who've just won or of men who have yet to prove themselves. Now, Percy is a fine man, a very distinguished Republican, and will cause a real stir in the country if he wins in Illinois against such powerful opposition as that of Senator Douglas. But that doesn't make him a presidential possibility just because he's won an election. I think we're seeing too much of that. I think the public expects the Republicans to put forward a man who's seasoned and tried, whom they've seen for a while, and who has a record of performance.
Well, Mr. Nixon is seasoned. Do you think he's a possibility in 1968?
Obviously, the polls show that he is. In my own judgment, I think the party ought to go for a new face and a new approach because there are new problems and the public wants answers to those problems. But Mr. Nixon is certainly a man not to be put aside. The Republican polls indicate that he's being very seriously considered by many Republicans.
Mr. Broder.
Excuse me.
Sorry, Mr. Broder.
Senator, you say that Mr. Nixon is too old a face. You say Mr. Percy is too new a face. It sounds to me like what you come down with is that you want everybody to unite behind Governor Romney.
I don't know that Governor Romney rates that until he wins this election and until we see what he's going to stand for. He looks very promising to me, and I'll say to you, yes, he, in my judgment, is the most promising of the group which is before us or which seems immediately available come this election.
As you know, former Senator Goldwater has raised a question both about Governor Romney and yourself that he regards as a basic one. The way he puts it is that he doesn't believe Republican Party workers will accept as the leaders of their party people who did not work for the national ticket in 1964. Why should they?
Well, I think they should because they want to win an election and they really want to challenge the Democrats. I think that Lyndon Johnson can be beaten in 1968. I think it's a very good thing for the country that he should be very seriously challenged. And whether I'm in it on the national level or on the national ticket or not, our party should do its utmost to summon those resources which will the most challenge the Democrats. It's a bad thing for our country that we're outnumbered 2-1 in the Congress, in the House, in the Senate, that in voters' preference we're outnumbered in excess of 2-1. This is bad for the two-party system. And I think Senator Goldwater's credentials, without any disrespect, must be questioned in view of the fact that this disaster hit us even worse in 1964 than ever before in the preceding 25 years.
May I ask you a question, Senator? Earlier this year, you were quoted as saying, I don't think Nixon can get the nomination. Do I understand from what you said a minute or two ago that you now think he can?
I didn't say that, and I still don't think he can, because I think the party is going to try in 68 to win, and as I read the 66 election results now, though one cannot predict them, it seems to me that the party will have an opportunity, given a new face, new concepts, the answers to the problems which trouble the people to really challenge with a chance to win. And with all respect to Vice President Nixon, on the record to date, I think our chances with him are not as good as our chances would be with Governor Romney as the matter stands now, though I hasten to add some new person may well come along, one we're not even talking about or thinking about. For example, just to give an example, they tell me, and from what I see, there is a very lively governor out in the state of Washington named Evans, who's making a great record. And something like that could happen so that you'd have a change from my present view.
Senator, you say you were not quoted as saying that, but one of the newspapers did quote you as saying that in an interview. I'd like to ask you about this, which you were also quoted as saying, and that is that Ronald Reagan, the Republican candidate for the governor of California, is unfit to be the party's candidate. Did you say that?
I have no recollection. I'm sorry to get into these questions of whether I said or didn't say. I'd rather deal with the substance of the
thing. This was reported in the New York Post from a Page One TV interview program.
I have no recollection of using any such words about Mr. Reagan out in California.
Well, how do you
feel
about
known.
That?
I'll tell you. I say I'd rather get into the substance. It's well known that as far as Mr. Reagan is concerned, I disagree with him thoroughly on the question of civil rights and the treatment of minorities and the laws which are required upon that score. I naturally, like any other Republican, would like to see my party win in California, and I hope very much that as the campaign goes on, we may find that experience and attrition will very materially modify Mr. Reagan's view.
Mr. Mueller.
You mentioned solutions to problems as a Republican alternative. There have been Republican charges, not by you, that President Johnson's trip to the Manila conference next week is a political gimmick. Do you have serious reservations on that?
Frankly, Mr. Mueller, I don't care whether it is or isn't. In other words, I don't care why the president is doing it from perhaps a personal intention point of view, and I would certainly not say that about any president of the United States. The office does something to the man, and I'm sure it's done something to Lyndon Johnson as it has to every one of his predecessors. So I would rule that out. I would not utter it. I would not think it. I would not say it. I think the visit is a good one. I think it can serve a very constructive purpose. I think it's essential that our allies get together, those who are contributing, like the Koreans, the Australians, and the those in the Philippines, the New Zealanders, and others, and consult with each other as to what ought to be done in that situation next. because I deeply feel the opportunity exists in the president to help from others who are not giving it now. There is some help coming from Europe, but by no means enough, and we ought to get more. Same is true of the Southeast Asia Treaty Organization. Secondly, I think it's an excellent American people, the new fact. I've been charging the administration with not telling them the new fact. The idea that you can beat the North Vietnamese over the head and bring them to the council table is over. They ain't going to come to the council table. This is now a guerrilla war which we're fighting. It's going to take a long time. Our means have to be apportioned to the fact that it will take a long time, and they have to be zeroed in essentially upon land reform, social and economic reform, and a civilian, freely elected government.
Mr. Royster.
And the picture you've given of the Republican prospects for nationally strike me as a little discouraging. Now, since the last debacle, as you call it, of Senator Goldwater, have you written in your book that the ultra-conservative extremist elements continue to exert their unhealthy influence on a Republican Party? And you've said that they are prepared to wreck the Republican Party. Now, Senator, who are these men that are going to wreck the Republican Party?
Well, I think it's the John Birch Society influence and the ultra-conservative influence, which turns the party of Lincoln into a party in some areas of the South, for example, which doesn't hesitate to lend its...
I see is playing a big role within the Republican Party?
I think my colleagues in states like South Dakota and North Dakota and other states in the Union have run into the John Birch Society head-on as an organization through its members trying to assert real influence and
now,
get control
if,
of the Republican
these people,
Party.
People, as you've said, they are well-financed and well-organized. You imply they play a big role in the Republican Party. But in order to take it over, they have to have a candidate. They have to nominate a candidate of their own. Now, who would be their candidate this year?
Well, Mr. Royster, they could. We don't have to do it this year. It's a little soon, but it has to be by 68. They can get behind a candidate. They don't have to have a candidate of their own. They can get behind a candidate, and there will be ultra-conservative material available for that purpose, in my judgment. I would not wish to get into the controversy about individuals at this particular stage. I don't think that would be fair. But I beg you to remember this. The development of Mr. Maddox as a candidate for governor in Georgia, an out-and-out segregationist of the most intransigent kind, the victory in Maryland of a man named Mahoney, also a segregationist on a segregationist platform, certainly indication to me that you're in danger of a wave of reaction in this country, and I want my party to turn against it. I think the party of Lincoln should turn against it, as it will mainly be based upon resentment because minorities have tried to assert their rights. Mind you, I'm all for putting down any violence or riots, but I do not believe that you can run a government or run a just society out of resentment. And that's the real struggle in my own party.
Mr. Timmish.
Senator Javits, would you like to be vice president someday?
What American boy would not? Of course I would. But that doesn't mean that I'm a candidate or that I will be a candidate or that is the most important thing in my life or the life of the United States. The important thing is that the two-party system shall be viable, that my party shall challenge, that it shall make its contribution to peace and freedom and justice in our country. And that's what I've devoted my life to. And that's what I hope to continue to devote it to.
Well, now, the people have elected a Catholic president in this country. Do you think that prejudice has subsided enough that a person of the Jewish faith could be nominated and elected in this country?
I think a person of the Jewish faith could be nominated and elected president. I think the barrier are some people, of course, who are still prejudiced and will vote one way or another depending upon that prejudice. But it does not represent what will make or unmake a president. If a man had the stuff... and had high enough standing with the American people of the Jewish faith, he would be elected president in 1968.
Mr. Broderick, I'll be back to you, Mr. Timmish.
Senator, I'd like to explore your concept of party loyalty. You seem to argue that disagreement with a man's position on civil rights or on the role of the John Birch Society is complete justification for you or somebody else to, in effect, disown him as a fellow Republican. What do you feel that you have any obligations to support other Republicans just because they are nominated as Republican candidates?
Mr. Broder, I think you've overstated my situation as far as Mr. Reagan is concerned. I didn't state that at all. I said I had a disagreement with him. You'll remember that I pointed out that I'd like my party to win in every state and in every district. But I have a conscience, too. I'm an American first. Then I'm a Republican. And I think that is the American standard. Now, you can tolerate many things. There are many conservatives in my party with whom I thoroughly disagree. I will yield to no one in my admiration for them and my constant deep feeling and advocacy that they belong in the party as much as I do. I have gone out to campaign for conservatives who are men of character and had a contribution to make to our party's future. But in conscience, there is a limit to that. I cannot, for example, being a member of the party of Lincoln and feeling as I do about what my party ought to stand for in that regard, go for a Republican candidate whom I would advocate who runs counter to all those principles. Doesn't mean I dislike him or I hate him or I can't be in the same party with him. After all, some of the most liberal Democrats are in the same party with the most out-and-out segregationists, and that includes the Vice President of the United States.
Well, if we end up, say, with a Romney-Javits Republican ticket in 1968, wouldn't there be a strong likelihood of a substantial Republican-conservative defection from that ticket?
Mr. Broder, I faced that in New York as a candidate running alone in 1956 and running with Governor Rockefeller in 1962. And on the figures, those defections are infinitely less than the defection of people of conscience in a case where a candidate would espouse views which are diametrically opposed to the tradition of his party, as, for example, on civil rights. In short, sure, they will be defections, but they'll be minor defections in my judgment, and secondly, the additions of strength from that one quarter of Americans who are independents and from a great many of those Americans, half of whom profess themselves to be Democrats, as to infinitely more than make up for the minor defections which will occur.
Gentlemen, we have less than 3 minutes. Senator, I'd like to ask you this. Are you prepared to give up an almost certain re-election to the Senate in New York to run as Vice President in 1968? Take that uncertainty on.
Mr. Spivak, if I face that issue, again, I will decide it as an American first, and don't forget that there's something to be said for the unbelievable honor of being on the national ticket of one of the great parties in our country, especially when, as I have, you've served for 20 years in every capacity, and after all, we serve for the respect and the affection of our people, as well as for the tremendous satisfaction of serving our nation and making it greater than ever and advancing the peace and justice of the world.
Do I understand then the answer is yes?
I couldn't say that. I think you're pressing me prematurely.
Mr. Mueller.
Senator, the President has tried to improve relations with Russia, and it's been virtually rejected today. And you have been quoted as saying it's time for a change of policy toward communist China. How would you improve our diplomatic approach to the communist giants?
I think I would press the fact that we are ready to, on a mutual basis, on a mutual exchange basis, let people in here if they will let people in there, especially beginning with journalists, scientists, doctors, etc. I think that should be the first step. I am not one of those who believe that we ought to admit communist China to the United Nations, considering the fact that it's practically shooting its way in and that it would spurn its obligations from every evidence you see. But I'd also be perfectly willing to lay that question on the table in a negotiation for the peace of Asia, which should be incident to a settlement of the Vietnamese War.
Mr. Royster.
Senator, you've used the word Republican a good many times, and you've identified yourself thoroughly with the Republican Party. And yet one of the phenomena of recent campaigns, and this one too, is the fact that a great many GOP candidates do not emphasize the Republican label. As Chaffee in Rhode Island, Volpe in Massachusetts, we could think of some others, these big billboard signs, but with no mention of the fact that they are Republicans. My question is simply this. Do you think there's something to be ashamed of in this Republican label?
It depends on how you define it. There's nothing to be ashamed of in it. It's a matter of the greatest pride. It's the great party of Lincoln. I've always used it. Let us remember, I say, because it's a fact, I'm not saying it with any prideful spirit, carried New York City in 1962, very substantially, on the Republican ticket. Now, if you stand for the kind of Republicanism with all respect, I feel I stand for, and Rockefeller and Romney and others like us stand for, you can be very proud of it.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Senator Javits, for being with us today on Meet the Press.